Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. It's July 7th, 2010. We're back in studios, but we're missing Tim. Francois is here with me, though, but Tim's out celebrating his fourth year anniversary with his girlfriend, but should be a good show regardless. Francois, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. A little bit hot recently in Ottawa.
I haven't noticed at all.
You know, and I haven't slept in a couple of days, just with all this free agency frenzy between the NHL and, you know, counting down the hours now until we find out where Mr. King LeBron James is going to be playing next year. It's an exciting time to be a sports fan. It is, depending on what your perspective is, an exciting time to be a Senators fan. And, you know, it's great. Glad to be back. We got lots to talk about, I guess, today between the draft and Gonchar and everything else. So I'm looking forward to getting it underway with you, man.
So you're not one of those detractors who gets a kick out of dropping Trow and shitting all over everything that Brian Murray does. You actually like the contract signing.
I like the contract signing overall. To put it in context, if Ken Holland made a signing like that, everyone would be praising the guy, like, oh, what a shrewd signing, you know. He's paying, you know, he's bringing in a veteran who might have a couple good years left, and, like, he'll really help them win. I think, like, when we were talking about it when it happened, it's a good signing because it's kind of like a payroll reallocation we were talking about, and it's only a three-year commitment, and it's only $5.5 million a year. Kovalev comes off the books at the end of this season. So in the grand scheme of things, everything else being equal, it's not a bad signing. And I think on average, $5.5 million a year for a guy who, over the next 2 years at least, is still arguably a top pair defenseman in the NHL, is a legitimate power play quarterback, something we haven't had here in the past. I like it. I'm kind of a fan.
Yeah, I think you made a good point when you mentioned contracts coming off the books. Like, you have a guy like Phillips coming off the books who likely will probably be retained for a cheaper sum than he is making right now. He's a Senator.
Yeah,
I
think he's past the point in his career now where he's looking for the next big contract.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
Now it's just if he wants to keep playing and staying here, then he's going to have to take what the team's going to give him, and I think that'll work out.
So. I think he's kind of like Alfredson in the sense that he'd be willing to do that. Philip Kuba, another guy who's coming off the books this year. So there's two defensemen coming off the books, and Gonchar signed for 3 years. He's not really blocking anyone in Ottawa's system from coming up within the next year or two. So, yeah, regardless of whether or not he's signed this year or next year, that you had to sign a good defenseman to replace the guys you're losing. So I don't mind it at all. And a lot of people are giving Murray credit for signing a guy who's has a reputation for setting up Evgeny Malkin along the half wall on the right-hand side. And that's where Alex Kovalev plays. And a lot of people are drawing correlations between those two players.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. As we know, we had massive problems on the power play last year. I think we were ranked 22nd in the league. And Kovalev usually picks up a good chunk of his points playing on the power play. And he was playing on a unit where, the people that were handling the point on our power play were not skilled. Yeah, they're terrible. Just an abysmal power play. I remember I used to, you know, get the point where I'd feel like throwing stuff sometimes. The power play would just, like, it would actually suck the life out of the momentum of the team sometimes.
Well,
it was so bad.
They haven't had a viable threat from the point since Chara left. There hasn't been a guy with a big shot who can consistently hit the net.
Yeah, I never thought that Wade Redden was necessarily a premier power play quarterback either, because
and
he never
Joe
shot
Corvo,
the puck.
Joe Corvo wasn't consistent enough.
No, and the thing is, I don't think Brian Murray's operating under the assumption that Sergei Gonchar is going to be a number one defenseman come year three of the contract. I think he's thinking that come year three of the contract, you're going to have Carlson, who's going to have, like, he's going to be in his fourth year, so probably playing some top pair minutes, hoping, probably going to have Cowan, Weirkosh, and Runblad, and who knows who else we may pick up along the way. So,
Brian Lee.
Even $5.5 million for a guy who's, say, a second pair defenseman, and still a legitimate power play quarterback
in
year three of the contract.
He's consistently demonstrated that he can put up points when healthy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's if there's one knock that people have against him, oh, well, he can't stay healthy.
But if you look at the injuries that he's had from the past 2 years, like,
they're freak things.
Dirty hits. Matt Cook,
Alex Ovechkin,
and I think he had strep throat or something like that.
Exactly. So I mean, I think if the guy can average, let's say, 60 games a year in the regular season, and barring any freak injury, stay healthy in the playoffs, I think it's a good contract, because he's not. And guys are so well conditioned nowadays. I mean, people say, well, he's 35. Well, guys are playing into their early 40s and still remaining relatively effective. So. Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is I talked to a few people, and they're saying, like, oh, well, you know, we don't have a defensive defenseman. We don't have a shutdown guy. We didn't re-sign Sutton. You know, Volchenkov's gone. But like, what did he, after the hit, he made one big hit on Leopold, which didn't even knock Leopold out of the series. I don't even think the game. And people are acting like this guy is somehow strikes in his eyes because, oh, there's a big hit potential.
I think
there.
That's a guy who could be in for a reality check. Because the way the money's flown off the books on the first couple of days of free agency, I don't think there's a lot out there.
He may go unsigned for a while.
Well, depending on what he's asking for, yeah.
I mean,
if that guy's thinking that he's going to make more than the 3.5 he made last year. Like,
no, he's sorely mistaken.
Yeah, exactly.
He's no better than a third pair defenseman at this point in his career.
No, he's a specialty defenseman who's good on the PK. He's kind of like in that Brent Sopel. Probably can't even move the puck as well as Brent Sopel, though.
Exactly. And I mean, there's this... people like to say, oh, well, he's a, you know, Anton Volchenkov, we're going to miss his block shots and his shutdown ability. But the reality of the situation is, and you and I have talked about this extensively, I think, well, not as extensively on the air, but off it, is the reason why he's blocking so many shots is quite often we end up hemmed in our own end when he's, not necessarily when he's out there, but quite often we're not clearing our zone quick enough, and we're letting the other team create opportunities, which means he has to block shots. So, I mean, it's like you say, I totally agree with you, where block shots is an incredibly inflated stat, I think, in today's NHL. It's just, it's like hits.
I think it's one of those tangible things. It's like a Jason Spezza turnover, where it's one of those things that you just see on the ice with your own eyes, and it's just very visible. Like, you notice it right away. It's not one of the smaller intricacies that you can really pick apart players to differentiate players, right?
To say that Volchenkov, or Sutton for that matter, are shutdown defensemen, I can't recall the last time, say, in a playoff series where Sutton or Volchenkov actually did a reasonably good job of shutting anybody down.
Well, you'd have to go back to the Stanley Cup Finals when Ottawa had a decent team. It kind of goes hand in hand with the talent that's around you, though, right?
Yeah.
And if your team's playing good collective defensive hockey, then by residual effect, everyone's going to be better, you know?
Yeah, but I guess
Tom Pricing was a plus 42 1 year. Like, that'll never.
Yeah, and I think it's not so much people get hung up on, well, you have to have a shutdown defenseman, but it's not that you have to have a shutdown defenseman. You just have to have a defensive core that has a defensively responsible mindset. And one example I think is, say, Chris Pronger somehow has gotten this reputation of being a defensive shutdown defenseman, but who is on that first unit power play for the Philadelphia Flyers? Chris Pronger. Like, who makes, like, and he makes a phenomenal first pass out of the zone.
He's a strong two-way guy, though, but I think you can be a good defensive defenseman without having to block shots or to be the physical agitating type. Like, you can be a strong positional player, like a Nick Lidstrom or even like a Rafalski's good.
Exactly.
You know?
But they do other things incredibly well, too.
Yeah, and I think Gontcharuk kind of fits in that mold. I think a lot of people label him as a one-dimensional player, but that's kind of unfair.
No, I think he's defensively responsible.
I just think it's one of those things that detractors often allude to when they haven't seen in this guy play enough. You know, they look at this guy on the surface and you see like a 36 or 37 or whatever the hell he is right now. I think he's 36. So you see a 36-year-old Russian defenseman making $5.5 million, and a lot of people are drawing parallels between him and Kovalev signing last year, and look at how well that worked out for us, you know? So it's frustrating, I guess, from a standpoint where you have these cynics who have a field day with what Ottawa's been doing lately.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at the other, I mean, the money that was basically thrown around like Halloween candy to, let's call it the top tier of defensemen available in the free agent market, like, Paul Martin's a guy who, what did he play, like a dozen games last year? And Pittsburgh gives him huge money and term. Zibanek Mikhalik is, at best, another Volchenkov. He gets huge money and, like, huge term. It's like, do you want to commit to Anton? The alternative is recommitting to Anton Volchenkov for 5 or 6 years. Do you really want to do that?
Years. I can't believe
it. I think that the 6 years is just to make the cap number go down. But, like, yeah, it's still, he got 6 years. Like, if he wants to play 6 years,
Good luck with that.
Oh, man.
Best of luck to you, New Jersey. All right. So, yeah, free agency. Ottawa picked up Gontcher. They re-signed Jesse Winchester. No real surprise there. He was an RFA. Signed to a reasonable deal. I think it was like $750K per season. I guess it's expected that he'll fulfill the fourth line duties again for the Ottawa Senators. I thought he did a reasonable job down the stretch. He improved his play a bit. He was a bit more physical, agitated. Skates all right. He's okay. He is what he is.
It's his fourth line center. Yeah, it's fine.
As a fourth line guy who's making no money, it's not a bad thing. Are you satisfied where Ottawa's at right now? Do you think they still have a move in them? Or how do you evaluate the team?
Well, I've been a big proponent of trying to max out on Brian Elliott's trade value and see what they might be able to get back for that. But I'm starting to buy into the philosophy more and more that you probably can't count on Pascal Leclaire to start more than 50 games in a year if he stays healthy, because I just think he can't do it. So I think probably the reason why Elliott is still in a Sens uniform at this point is because they're looking at some sort of a tandem situation for the regular season duties, and then Leclaire will be the guy going into playoffs.
It's also a soft market, right? Like Evgeny Nabokov just signed, I think, today with St. Petersburg in the KHL for $6 million a year. Because there was no work for him for what he was expecting in terms of salary.
Yeah.
And Marty Turco is still available. Look what happened to Chris Mason. Halak got dealt, signed a deal. I thought he signed for a smaller figure than what he was probably going to get.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing in the NHL now is that, you know, goaltender in the NHL is becoming like the running back in the NFL, where it's like if you build a good enough team around your goaltender, you don't need to spend $6 million on your goaltender if you have a solid team around them. As long as you have a guy who can stay relatively consistent and, you know what, you know, doesn't give up too many bad goals on a nightly basis, it's been shown by the last couple of teams that have won the Stanley Cup that, you know, you don't have to spend $5 and $6 million on a goaltender.
And I think the model for that's Detroit, right?
Absolutely.
For the past few years, yeah, they've gotten away with it. They build a strong blue line, and then they have a great core of two-way players up front, and they've had success. Even Ottawa was a model of that kind of role for a while under like guys like Patrick Lilly and Damian Rhodes, Ron Tugnutt. You know, they made average guys look really good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you're seeing now is, you know, the cap has been a reality now for a couple of years, and you're really starting to see that there are certain teams who are finally starting to really understand how you operate in a salary cap reality, Detroit being one of them. And you look at some of the moves that Chicago's made after the Stanley Cup, and you can start to see, wow, they're really starting to understand how to manage the cap. You know, you have to sometimes move some of these guys, like a Dustin Byfuglien, who overachieved in the playoffs, who, you know, is really no more than probably a third line player who's going to demand big dollars. You maximize the return on him, and then you sign some of these veterans on the cheap, hoping to get maybe one or two more years out of them. You know, where if you give them a chance to win, you might get some rejuvenated production out of them. Like, look at Detroit, what they did with Brett Hull, Luke Robitaille.
It almost reminds me of like the New England Patriots model, right?
Yeah.
Where they get all these guys, and then when people start to think they're better than they're worth, they get rid of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I agree with you. When the Byfuglien trade happened with Atlanta, like, that's a great return for a guy who was playing defense and got moved to forward for the playoffs.
Yeah. I thought it was a tremendously good trade.
And who else did they move? They moved Andrew Ladd.
They dumped Sopel's salary, too.
Yeah, they moved Andrew Ladd. Got rid of Sopel. Versteeg, who's a third liner.
Yeah.
Who he'll play a lot of minutes in Toronto, so he might turn out to be okay. But
yeah, because the alternative is, like, if they keep Versteeg and Byfuglien, they lose their second line center and Patrick Sharp, who is a legitimate second line NHL center. Like, they understand, you know, you build through the middle, you spend heavy on your top two centers, and
you can fill the rest with prospects.
As long as the other guys can skate,
yeah.
I mean, you can get away with being a really competitive team that way.
I think part of that is that you have to have a good developmental program and a good system. And if you can replace those guys for cheap, you do it.
Yeah.
And that's the way to go.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see now what Dale Tallon does in Florida. You can see that already he's starting to kind of go down that road, trades Nathan Horton and everything like that. So you can start to see there's some GMs out there that are starting to understand how to operate within the cap. Brian Burke, arguably not one of them just yet, with $3 million on Colby Armstrong a year. So it'll be interesting to see moving forward. But in terms of needs that Ottawa, that they could address immediately through free agency or through a feasible trade,
I don't think they have the assets to move right now, right? I think it'll be status quo until next year until when all that cap room comes off the books. But yeah. Speaking of needs, I need something to drink. So how about we take a break and we'll come back in like 2 minutes?
That sounds good.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Back, Sense fans. We're back here on the Sixth Sense podcast. That was a good break. We got to finish up some of those conversations we were having earlier. And the one thing is, just to wrap up the discussion about Gonchar, one thing I was saying to you was I felt like the signing of Gonchar, we can take that almost as an indication, in my opinion, that Jason Spezza is not going anywhere. Because, you know, how can you justify bringing in Gonchar if you're looking to move out your number one center and effectively not be a very competitive team in the upcoming season?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I thought it was just a jumpstart Kovalev. Fuck Spezza. But yeah, it goes back to, you know, July 1st came and went. Spezza's no trade clause kicked in. It kind of reminds me of that old adage that you get every year at the NHL trade deadline where it's like, you know, sometimes the best moves you make are the ones you don't. And yeah, Spezza's in town and obviously, I wasn't necessarily an advocate for trading Spezza, but if the return wasn't good, I'd love having the guy back. I never really had an issue with the player. So
yeah, I mean, he's a legitimate first-line player. He'll put up close to, if not over, 80 points. I think, I mean, he should be pretty much a lock for that if he stays healthy this year.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, wasn't he? Did he not tie for the team scoring lead in playoff points this year?
I was actually surprised by the number of points he had, considering
like,
the start,
I think him
start
and Colin
the series,
were
yeah.
tied for the playoff.
He came on towards the end.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's one of those guys where it's not always pretty. Well, sometimes it's very pretty. Not always pretty, referring mostly to the turnovers, but he'll get it done, you know. And I think he wants to win. I think he's a competitive guy. So
he strikes me as one of those guys who cares, probably. A little too much sometimes, maybe, and he takes things a little bit more personally than he should.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think he tries really hard to be the face of this franchise.
It's like, you know, it's like Terrell Owens crying, defending Tony Romo.
Oh,
like, is that taking things too seriously?
Yeah.
Like, you think, would you see Spezza crying? Like, you know, if Alfredson had a bad game,
well, I don't
crying,
see like
that's
I don't
my captain.
I don't see like Spezza handing out like B12 shots in the dressing room or anything like that, but. He just strikes me as one of those guys who, like, even when Heatley was traded, like, Spezza was front and center after leaving the gym, and he was answering questions about one of his good friends. And then he went through that whole wedding ordeal last year. And, you know, like, he was very front and center with the media, and he was their go-to guy for a lot of the last summer regarding that was going on. And he did it. It was probably the Heatley. I thought the Heatley trade was the best thing that ever happened to him. So to hear him sour, like, a year later, it's kind of a cause for concern. But I just hope in the aftermath of this ordeal that he's not going to be one of those guys whose bitterness and lingering concerns about this city or this organization or this fan base just diminishes whatever.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people look at Jason Spezza as the heir apparent to Daniel Alfredson in terms of being captain of this team. But I don't necessarily know that that's... It's fair to look at Jason Spezza that way. I mean, it's so I think a lot of people sometimes are hard on him. I've been guilty of that at times throughout his career in Ottawa, definitely. But I mean, what's the alternative? If you want to make the playoffs and you want to have a competitive team, there is no alternative.
There are alternatives, but it's just they're the same kind of player. Like, would you want a guy like a Brad Richards on your team or a guy like a Joe Thornton? Like, these guys are coming up in free agency next year, and like. They're very similar guys.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, speaking of alternatives, the one thing that's interesting, very comparable player to Jason Spezza as well, a guy like Mark Savard. Now, sources have said, or wherever you read, that he's basically given Boston two teams, Toronto and Ottawa. Is that a guy, I mean, is that a guy that's an attractive option to you as a Senators fan and put your GM hat on a little bit?
I like the dollar figure attached to Savard, 4.2, but that comes at the cost of his term, right? Like, the deal's front loaded, so he's making, I think, like $7 million for the first couple of years, and for a city that's paying, or for an organization that's paid a lot of money to guys up front, like Jason Spezza's bonus clause that kicked in on July 1st, where he got $4 million. I don't know if Eugene's, and they bought out Chichi, right? So I don't know if Melnick's in a position where he wants to absorb a lot of money right now. Like, I know the cap figure is a lot better than the real figure right away, but there are concerns about Savard, like his injuries and in concussion away from like not playing. So maybe, I guess some people would argue the long-term injury reserve is not necessarily a bad thing too if he does get hurt. But,
and I mean, I'll even add to that. I mean, assuming that Brian Murray's interested in Savard or whatnot, or it somehow happens that Jason Spezza and Savard, it's feasible that they are your one and two centers. Can you get through the Eastern Conference? Like, is that a combination that's good enough to get you through the Eastern Conference, having to go through Crosby and Malkin and or potentially Ovechkin in a same playoff run? I don't necessarily know that Mark Savard is a guy that takes you over the top, given what the current roster is.
It's a good question. Like, who knows, though? That's kind of like the roll of the dice every year, right? Like, every year, every season, your team changes and the dynamics of every other team changes, except for the Philadelphia Flyers goaltending situation. But, it's obviously it's a cause for concern. Like, we've been soft down the middle before with guys like Todd White and Bonk and who else was on those teams, like Van Allen, and you could tell they got pushed around, and it'd be difficult, I think, playing some of the more physically dominant teams in the East. But for the point production, I think Savard could be a very serviceable number two center, and he is a legitimate number one center when he's healthy. So if you had two number one guys, it's not necessarily that bad. It's just, I think it's more in terms of what would Boston want to give up, and is his contract manageable? And I think that's the biggest issue.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, that would only even pique my interest so long as Spezza is still in the mix, right? Because if it's a situation where, say, Spezza's out the door and Mark Savard's in, like, that's a lateral move at best, right?
Yeah.
So
probably a small step back. So going from Savard, who's kind of old, I think he's 32. Well, how about we talk about the new, the NHL draft was held a couple weeks ago. We haven't really hit on that too much. Well, we haven't even been in studio since it actually happened. I was away on vacation in New York, and, I got a text message from you that I think it was said, WTF, we traded our first round pick. But, we brought in a defensive prospect, David Rundblad.
Yeah, I mean, originally, I think it's just because, like, you have to understand, this draft thing, like no other professional sports draft, first of all, I'm not going to get into the whole NHL draft lottery thing, which is an absolute abomination, but they stretched this thing out huge. So, like, I was sitting in front of TV for, like, 2.5 hours waiting for us to make our pick, and the pick gets traded. So it wasn't so much that I didn't like David
Rundblad.
At least
you weren't at Burt's Bar, though, celebrating with the rest of the Senators draft party.
It wasn't so much a slight against David Rundblad as much as, like, I've been waiting, you know, two and a half hours
Absolutely.
For Brian Murray to make a pick. And I'm like, what's going on? He trades the pick for, you know, this guy that obviously no one knows about.
I didn't get a chance to watch it, though, on television. What were the experts saying at the time of the pick?
Well, I mean, they were saying, like, he was drafted 17th the year before. So it's pretty much like, I don't know, they didn't really have that much to say about him, only that he had played in the World Juniors. He was a solid defenseman. David Rundblad aside, and whether he ever pans out or not, what that trade demonstrated to me was that they had their depth chart. They really couldn't justify picking anyone with the 17. So they take someone who they feel comfortable basically picking at 17, and mm-hmm. who's a year more developed than anyone they'd be getting in that at the 17th pick anyways, right?
Yeah. Reading into what the organization was saying kind of like leading up to the draft, it seemed to me that they wanted to take a center. And I was looking at the how the first round developed leading up to the center's pick, and it looked like the two centers who went right before Ottawa's pick, I think Granlund was taken like nine.
Yeah, I think they. I think they were. I think they
Schwartz
might have
was
wanted
taken like 11th or 12th or something. So
yeah, I think they might. They might have wanted
Granlund.
Granlund. I think that's. I think they were hoping he would. He might fall a couple picks to them, and then they might have the deal. I think they had the deal on the table with St. Louis, and then if you know Granlund ends up falling, then they take him, and if not, they make the trade for Rundblad. So.
It's good. It's good in organization's dealings, though, because you know you have a talented Russian available, but in Tarasenko, but it's just one of those situations. Can this organization afford to roll the dice on it, on the possibility that a Russian player will bolt?
Yeah, I mean,
considering how guys like Ilya Zubov and Andrei Nikulin have you know forced the team's hand a bit, and they've been moved. It hasn't hurt us. But I don't think this team can afford one of those situations. I like what they did. They continue to stockpile a talented blue line for the future. And I think right away you have guys like Cowan, Weirkotch, Greiba, Rundblad, and Carlson. You have five young guys who could step into this lineup within the next 2-3 years.
Exactly. And I mean, the thing about Rundblad as well, he hasn't been playing junior hockey. Like, he's been playing professional hockey for a year or two now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting, you know, he's playing against men.
Yeah, and he just signed an entry-level deal, too. So he's probably a year closer than anyone Ottawa could have drafted in that position anyway.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think it's a shrewd move. Would I have liked to see Brian Murray use that trade as potentially an opportunity to acquire a second-round pick that we had lost previously? Or... make St. Louis take on some salary, say in the form of like a Nick Foligno type player, and get a little bit more creative. Yeah, in a perfect world, obviously. But do I like the trade? Absolutely. Not so much because I don't know what David Rundblad will be able to eventually do for the organization, but I like the ideology and the motive behind the pick, which basically demonstrates, and we hashed this to death, I think, in the show we did with Pierre Dorion about taking the best player on the board. And I think that trade demonstrates that they were committed in some way, shape, or form to taking the best player available with that 17th pick.
You mentioned one name, actually, about 20 seconds ago. Nick Foligno. Looking at Ottawa's depth chart, Regan was playing with Spezza on the left wing last year.
McCulloch's
coming back. You have Ruutu on the third line.
Yeah, like where does Foligno fit in? Unless... they're hoping that Regan can center the second line.
But that just congests your center line problem with Fisher, Kelly. And I guess exactly. That leads us to that whole conundrum of like you have a third line that had career years and we haven't really moved any of them. Like Ruutu is going to be unrestricted after the season. Like I'm kind of surprised that Brian Murray hasn't aggressively pursued a deal to like free up some roster spots and like save himself some coin.
Yeah, because I think that trading, you know, like trading some of these guys, like a Kelly, like a Neil, like a Ruutu, like a Foligno, we're not going to be any worse, and we're going to be developing kids at the pro level. And you look at what it takes now. You have to this thing about seasoning a guy in the AHL for 2 and 3 years. That's like that's dead. Like if you think you have a legitimate
tell that to Kyle Turris.
If you think you have a legitimate pro on your hands, like I'm a big advocate of developing a kid at the pro level.
Well, you fast track. I think baseball started to go like that. Like guys like Steven Strasburg and Mike Stan are fast tracking faster than they would have in the past. Anyways.
Yeah. So it's kind of like sink or swim, right? Like it's I don't think any extra seasoning is going to make the guy be a successful pro. Like if the guy's destined to be a pro. If he has the makeup.
Learn on the fly.
Look at Carlson. Like, a lot of people were saying, well, he'd be too small. Like, arguably, I don't think his development would have been any better had he played the entire season in Binghamton. Like, I think he has overshot the level he'd be at had he played the entire season in the NHL because he had to play in the NHL because he had to adapt to the pro game so quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to see some of those roster spots get freed up, but... I can't see that there'd be much of a market for that third liner, Nick Foligno, out there. I mean, who knows? But
personally, I prefer to keep Foligno because he's still young. He has probably more upside than a guy like Ruutu ever will. I think Foligno is possibly one of those guys who could crack 20 goals. But I'm also one of those guys who'd love to see Chris Kelly and Ruutu get moved to make space for Foligno on the third line. You slide Fisher down, and then you bring in a second-line center somehow.
Yeah, like I think if out of those four guys, Foligno, Ruutu, Kelly, and Neil, like if in some way you can move two out of the four then you're in a really good position to, you know, put a half decent roster together. But it's nice to dream, I guess.
So we're talking about freeing up roster spots, and a guy, a former Ottawa 67s star, just signed a two-way contract, reportedly. These reports have been circulating on the internet now. Corey Locke, former Montreal Canadiens draft pick, has signed with the Senators.
Wasn't he? Oh, no, he wasn't. That was Tessier that was on making... what was that, that show during the lockout, that reality show with Mike Keenan?
Oh, yeah.
Making the cut.
Making the cut, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Lou Dickinson was
Lou Dickinson.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, Corey Locke. Don Brennan's got to be loving this deal. Former 67s. You know? Pull at the heartstrings.
So
here.
is he the type of local guy you sort of carry on the pro roster all year as the healthy scratch, or is he in Binghamton?
I think he might be one of those guys who really helps out Binghamton a lot. He might be one of those guys that they're targeting to help them out, because they lost, I think, a couple of their key guys. I don't know if Denny Hamel is back. I don't know if Martin St-Pierre
is
back.
The
future
greatest
star, Martin St-Pierre.
Denny Hamel, arguably the greatest player in the history of the AHL, the most prolific goal scorer in the history of the AHL.
I remember the first time that guy got called up to Ottawa, and then he had a couple of cups of coffee, and then he got sent down, and he was pissed. I guess he thought he could be a legitimate talent, but I think he requested a trade at the time, but it never manifested. And I don't know, he's been down in Binghamton kind of like ever since. Until that Phaneuf hit, he got called up for a game or two, and he got careened by Phaneuf. But yeah, Denny Hamel. Oh, that brings me back. But Corey Locke put up 85 points in the AHL last year with the Hartford Wolfpack.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be a good... He's the type of guy that, you know, you probably keep him in bingo. If we get a couple injuries, he'll be up for a couple games here, back down, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I really don't have a problem with the signing.
Guess GM O'Brien won't be centering the first line anytime soon.
Don't think so.
Do you think this is a guy who has an opportunity to crack the Senators roster at some point during the season?
No.
You don't think so?
Oh, well...
obviously, injuries will play a part.
Injury, but I don't think he's, in terms of actually getting regular playing time, I don't think he's higher on the depth chart than, say, a guy like Bobby Butler.
Yeah.
Like, I think if there's actually looking at bringing up a guy for, like, an extended period of time, I think Bobby Butler is probably the first guy.
But he's a winger. Speaking of clearing space, you want to get out of the studio for a minute? Take a break? Come back? Hammer out a conclusion?
Let's do it.
No podcast featured guest this week, so we're taking things easy. It's the summertime. It's really hot.
We have 100% creative control.
It's really hot out. We're kind of lazy. It's not our fault. Anyways, we'll be right back. So, Francois, you mentioned earlier, LeBron James is doing his featured special tomorrow on ESPN.
I got that.
Where
I'm going to record it. It's
a one-hour special where he's going to make his decision on where he's going to play next year.
Do you think Stuart Scott will be, like, interviewing him in a dark room with, like, these velvet chairs?
It would be kind of funny if they had, like, all the NBA team's executives lined up. Like, one reference. It would be like the draft, right? Like, where they pick out the ping pong balls and, like, the GMs are all surprised. It'd be fun if they had, like, a team rep from each organization there. And we get to see how they react whenever it goes down.
Prokhorov, he just straight look.
He calls the mob. Picks up his cell phone right away.
LeBron gets walked in with like one of those like black like bags on his head, like he's gonna get guillotined, and then he announces he's signing with the Nets. And just like camera pans to Prokhorov, just like stoic look on his face.
I was listening to Team 1200 this morning though, and there was a lot of resentment, I guess, towards these NBA players and their delusions of grandeur, where they think it's like all ego and self-importance, wherein they could have their own one-hour special to like showcase where they're gonna go. It seems like there's been a lot of hockey fan backlash towards this. How do you feel about that?
LeBron James is arguably the biggest free agent across all sports of our generation. Like, he's the most sought-after commodity in all of professional sports since Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky. No, not even Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan. Like, this guy is a brand. Like, he's all world, you know what I mean? So he's looking to build his own brand. So by doing this, you know, it's going to be heard around the world and everything like that. I don't necessarily fault the guy. I mean, it's
for charity, man.
Yeah. I personally don't have a problem with it.
It's weird though, because you listen to people comment and say, oh, it's just a waste of TV. Like, why would people tune in to watch this? And
what else is going on right now though?
It brings me back to like those days where there's nothing going on TSN. So they fill like a half hour of like, or the TSN NHL expert panel picks for the playoff pool. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't care who James Duthie picks. Like, I don't need more affirmation that Keith Jones is an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, just move on.
No, exactly.
Find something else to talk about.
Yeah. It's just, the Canadian hockey fan is so overly focused on hockey that sometimes it's ridiculous. It's like, there's some kind of weird, like, superiority complex when it comes to hockey, where it's like, people think that it's just... it's such a unique sport, and oh, the guys that play it are just, you know, the most humble athletes in the world and everything like that. The reason they're the most humble athletes in the world, Graham, is because they don't get paid nearly as much as any of the other guys.
Good stuff. NFL players don't make that much.
Well, the good ones do.
Yeah.
Well, it's not guaranteed contracts.
Yeah, but even then, they don't make that much money.
It's not guaranteed contracts.
I'm just surprised that Canadian fans, like Canadians in general, just aren't more pissed off that Joey Votto, king of Suato, got the snub from the NL All-Star game.
Did you do your good deed for the day and vote for Joey Votto?
Not yet. I haven't been around a computer this afternoon, but I was going to. I was even going to put up a blog post on our website saying, vote for this guy.
Yeah, I did it. I did this morning. I took a little break from my work this morning and made sure to go on. And cast my vote for Joey Votto, and then did a little Facebook campaign, a little grassroots thing, try and get the movement going. But apparently, when he wasn't named to the All-Star team, there's been a huge snub reaction all around the league, and it's looking like he'll get in quite easily.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's an injured replacement, you know?
But, I mean, it's like, you know, people are calling in the radio bitching about LeBron James having a one-hour press conference, wanting to talk about hockey, which is like, there's nothing going on in hockey right now. And meanwhile, you have in Major League Baseball...
completely discredits Corey Glock signing today.
And meanwhile, you have, like, in baseball, you have, for the first time in history, two Canadians in either league. So, Morneau in the American League, Votto in the National League, within striking distance, and arguably, depending on who you talk to, both are front runners for their respective league's MVP awards. Like, that's something that's worth... you know, really following, I think, more so than NHL free agency. And like, where's Ilya Kovalchuk going to sign, you know? Because we all know he's going to the KHL. he's gonna have a 2-hour TV special, and they're going to bring in like McGillney and Fedorov, and like, there's going to be like, yeah, it's going to be awesome.
And Pierre Maguire, we'll talk about him too.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good rant. Good show. I'm happy with it. Let's go drink.
Yeah, I'm fairly satisfied.
I could use a good beverage, but thanks for listening to the show, guys. We really appreciate thanks for listening to the show, guys. We'd really appreciate any feedback that you guys have. Feel free to shoot us an email, comment on whatever we said.
Man, you really Jamarcus Russell'd that outro.
I did. But yeah, good thing we can edit this. But if you're offended by Francois's comments about hockey fans being insecure, having insecurity complexes.
I'm a hockey fan. It's just sometimes I don't understand what's going on in people's heads, you know?
Nah, that's what happens when you live in a one sport town though.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
That's part of the problem.
We have nothing else to distract us.
Yeah, you turn into a bit of an extremist.
We could have had a reasonable shot at an MLS franchise, but you know, that Glenn Kulka movement saw to it that we didn't.
Who knows? Maybe they kinda use, I think it's like the North American Soccer League or something like that, that Jeff Hunt's trying to bring to the part of like the Lansdowne Live bid. Maybe that's like just like a pilot, like a test thing. And if soccer takes off, I wouldn't be surprised to see Melnick get back on it.
Yeah, that could be.
So anyways, I'd like to thank the listeners for tuning into the program. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Tim, looking forward to seeing you sometime soon. And yeah, good show, Francois. Nice job, man.
Thank you. You're always an ace on the microphone, too.
Oh, thank you. Compliments going around. Let's go get a beverage. All right. Take care, guys. Talk to you soon. Cheers.
See the dwarfs and see the giants. Which one would you choose to be? And if you can't get that together, here's the answer, here's the key. You can freeze like a 30-century man, like a 30-century man. I'll save my breath and take it with me.